Now, the cover of today's order of service,
we can bring that up.
You. Is a picture of Raphael's great fresco, The School of Athens, that was painted between the years 1509 and 1511. Sometime in April, I'm going to be in Rome. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see this in person, but I'm going to try. I selected it for the cover because it represents an idealized version of, or a harmonious version of, the great Greek schools of philosophy and science, which, what philosophy included science at that time. The two central figures are Plato on the left and Aristotle on the right. Plato is pointing to the sky, symbolizing his belief that the material world is just a shadow of a higher, truer reality that includes things like goodness and beauty. And Aristotle holds his hand out, palm down, symbolizing that in his philosophy, the only reality is the one that we can see and experience by sight and touch. Aristotle's Ethics, the book that he's holding, emphasizes the relationships between justice and friendship and government within the human world and our need to study it and understand it. The painting includes a great many classical philosophers. If you look it up on the web, and I encourage you to do it, there's lots of really interesting material on this painting. But there's a great number of philosophers that are seen in the image. And the image is divided down the middle. So philosophers mostly concerned with theory, like Plato, appear on his side of the drawing, and those more concerned with practical matters appear on Aristotle's side of the drawing. The philosophies that are represented here are divergent and often incompatible. And I remind you that Greek philosophy wasn't just about theoretical studies or academic studies. It was about how you lived your life. You devoted your whole life to your philosophy. But these philosophies were very different and divergent. And yet the individual people in this painting are all human beings, not unlike you and me, striving to give meaning to our experience in the world. This could be a metaphor for the Unitarian Universalist faith tradition, as we are unique as a faith tradition, and that we're not united by a common creed. You can take that down now. Thank you. We are a theologically and philosophically diverse group, united by our acknowledgement that we are all here in different places in our own attempts to make sense of life and to give meaning to our own lives. UUs are generally known for two things, our theological diversity and our social justice work. Like the philosophies of Plato and Aristotle, these two aspects of who we are can be in tension at times, in tension between the two aspects and within the two aspects. Within our theological diversity, there are inevitable tensions, most obvious between theists and atheists, and it represents an obvious schism or potential schism. But the division can be much more complex. Our insistence on avoiding creed or dogma is the basis for our welcome for people of all goodwill, in all faith traditions or none. Buddhists, neo-pagans, Christians, Muslims, mystics of all sorts, humanists and atheists, and theists alike. We won't exclude anyone from our congregations based on their personal beliefs. We would only exclude someone based on offensive behavior. We're united by our statement of seven principles, which our congregations affirm and promote. But they're general, they're open to interpretation, and they're not binding on individuals. We manage our theological diversity with our principles to guide us and a few simple understandings. Probably the most important of these is that we don't come to church for the purpose of converting anyone to our personal beliefs. And that includes the minister. I'm not here to convert you to anything. I found one idea that's helpful for me in dealing with this tension, and it starts with the assumption that we are all people of goodwill. I believe that's always a good place to start. After that assumption, that we're people of goodwill and we're doing the best we can to lead a good life. And given that, I'm more interested in how your beliefs lead you to lead a good life. I'm more interested in that than I am in about why you believe it is what you believe. At some level, I don't really care what your holy books say or what source you have found on the internet to support your belief. I want to know how that belief makes you a better person, because I may learn from that. We seem to understand this tension as a faith tradition. I've never heard of a case where we put forward a motion at an annual meeting to vote on a matter of theology. But in matters of social justice, we somehow feel compelled to advance specific causes by voting at our national annual meetings. Such motions have at times been very divisive. I'm thinking, for example, recent meetings that I attended, motions related to condemning the state of Israel for one transgression or another. Two aspects of this are of interest to me here. First, we acknowledge that our system of church governance is based on congregational polity. There is no ecclesial authority over this congregation. I don't report to any bishop. There is no higher authority than the elected governing board of this congregation. So it's not clear to me what authority any motion passed at our annual meeting or congregations has over member congregations. Second, it's telling to note that some think that taking a vote at a controversial social justice issue at a national meeting is appropriate. But I don't think we would ever take such a vote at a congregational level unless we were prodded to do so by our national association. Why not? Because it would effectively exclude members of our congregation who objected to the motion, whatever it was. And in the process of taking such votes at a congregational level, we'd be limiting ourselves, defining what Unitarians believe, creating a creed, if you will, and excluding those who didn't identify with that creed. Now, I acknowledge here that I'm flirting with a problematic idea that to some extent is impractical. I recognize there are some issues that clearly offend our collective sense of justice and compassion to the extent that we have passed motions and taken stands that we are now proud of as Unitarian Universalists. In the past, these stands have included stands against slavery, stands in favor of equality of the sexes, and issues related to LGBTQ rights, just to name a few. And the problem is that all of these signature issues at one point in the past were controversial. They were not unanimously accepted. So there was need for discussion and debate and reaching a consensus. So the lessons of the past would certainly seem to say that to advance the cause of justice in the world, you have to advocate and argue and discuss and challenge. And believe me, I'm in favor of all of that. But my question is, why do we feel the need to put these issues to a vote? What's the objective in voting? What I cherish most about Unitarian Universalism is our role as a bridge builder, our ability to cross religious, cultural, racial, socioeconomic barriers, to bring people of goodwill together, people with different perspectives, to bring more love and justice into the world. We seem to understand this well on a theological level, but on a social justice level, not so much sometimes. See, if the goal is to change hearts and minds, then we need to exemplify that within our congregation and as a national association. But by voting on social justice issues, we don't win hearts and minds. We only say to people who might someday change their position that they're not welcome here in the meantime. We define ourselves narrowly, and we exclude people of goodwill. So if the goal is to change hearts and minds, it begins here in the congregation with that discussion, with that debate, with that dialogue. We need to promote that and have faith that rational, critical thinking based on our principles and bolstered by love and compassion will eventually win out. We don't need to put it to a vote. That, at least, is my interpretation of Unitarian Universalism. So I want to thank, at the end of my remarks here, I want to thank the young members of the congregation for participating in the service today. Several of them just saw what the readings they had to deliver today just this morning, so I appreciate them doing that. When we met last week, we had a wide-ranging discussion about diversity within our congregation, because I was thinking about this sermon and how we keep together despite our disparate opinions. It started with a comment about my upcoming sabbatical, and it ended with the discussion of the music by the heavy metal band Black Sabbath. You no doubt can follow the trail there from sabbatical to Black Sabbath. The comment was made that if we were serious about diversity in the congregation, there would be more diverse music, like maybe Black Sabbath. So Charles picked up the challenge, and he's going to play some Black Sabbath for us this morning. Thank you, Charles.